Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 19 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and I'm joined, as usual, by Matthew Davis. Matthew, how are things in San Francisco? In California.
San Francisco? No.
You're the San Francisco.
Central Coast.
No, go. What's going on?
This day. So good morning, Ariel. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing great. Just excited to talk about the baseball season with you and to hear about your projection system and what else you're doing this year. So it's going to be an exciting podcast for me, at least.
Oh, I'm looking forward. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah, not a problem, Ariel. I think for folks that don't know you, I've got to believe that the majority of the fantasy community does, but your resume, quite impressive and speaks for itself. We want to talk about a lot of different things, Ariel, as you've won, you know, numerous FSWA awards, Writer of the Year last year. And the thing I think that I know I use as a tool, as Matthew's mentioned, is your projection system, which, you know, Fantasy Pros also tagged as most accurate fantasy baseball. We want to talk also about just kind of the competition format you're in. I think, you know, you're an NFBC player in the Auction Championship. You're in the Raz Slam, but you're also in some expert leagues that I think are pretty interesting, you know, Tout Wars, Labor, and things like that. But I think we want to give the people what they want, and probably most importantly is kind of just turn it over to you, and let's talk about projections. I think your ATC system is pretty interesting. It's obviously, as I mentioned, pretty accurate, but maybe give us an overview before we have some questions for you. How did you come up with it? Where did it start? What made you do it?
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't wake up and say, hey, I want to make a projection system. I mean, no, I was playing my own fantasy baseball, my home leagues. And I'm like, all right, got to get some good projections. So let's try to beat everybody. New strategy this year instead of just looking at somebody's rankings, go on CBS and see rankings, and do I like the player? So who the heck? I don't know how to make a projection system. So what I said was, let me just learn from others. My method is very similar to what Nate Silver does over at 538 with his polling outfit. And I look at a couple of projections, many projections, actually. I look at some past history. But I don't just take an average. A lot of people say, well, just take a third, and there you go. There's your projections. I do a lot more than that. I've compiled and accumulated a lot of these projection data sets for years and years, and I've studied which ones work better for certain categories. Some projections are far better at home runs than the others. Some are better at pitcher strikeouts. Some are better at triples. You know, every single stat that you can project, sometimes a projection system is better and sometimes it's worse. Sometimes playing time comes out better from one model, and sometimes some models just, they don't know what the heck they're doing. So I use more weight. It is an average. The ATC is the average total cost projection system. So I do average them, but it's not an even average. It's a smart average. I'll use 30% of one and 2% of another and 5% of another, and whatever the weights turn out to be that I've calculated is the best long-term fit. And this way I get the biggest long-term accuracy. I reduce minimum bias of everything. You know, if you follow the ATC projections in the long run, you'll end up with a lot more hits than misses. That's the general philosophy of what I do. Obviously, there's a lot of data that goes into it, and you have to know how to run regressions and whatnot, and how to work a lot with data, but hey, I've done the work for you, and they're up on Fangraphs and on Sportsline as well for you guys to see.
No, I think that's interesting, and I know Matthew does awesome work over for us at FTN. So I guess for both of you, you know, I've probably taken the easy road. Matthew does really detailed projections. Obviously, Ariel, your method's pretty detailed as well. For somebody like me, I don't put that effort into it. I shouldn't say I don't have the time. None of us have the time. We have to create time to do something. This unique and robust. So as you go through that, I guess really for both of you, as you go through, how do you factor in, and a question that we had, Ariel, for a previous guest is, how would you factor in like a 2020? I mean, it's a unique year, right? It's a 60-game sprint. It may be more. It may be less. How will you think about working that into your model for next year as you build projections? Is it an outlier? How heavily do you weight it?
Well, I mean, you know, the truth is that I'm using other projections, and you know, I'm not doing the actual projections of the baseline. I'm just doing the right blending, and I'm curious to see what the other projection systems are going to do. I know some of the people who created them, and I've been in discussions with them. Most of them say, well, you know, you'll divide it per game. So if you have, you know, 162 game season, if you have 60 game season, well, that's your weight.
39%.
Whatever it is. I think that I don't know if I would agree with that. I think some statistics take longer to fit. So, you know, like homers, that would take longer. I would actually give less weight even. The strikeouts take shorter. I would actually give almost full credit to strikeouts. You know, I would really base it on the credibility of each statistic. But as far as what I would do in terms of weighting the projections, I don't foresee much movement from this year. I mean, I'm at the point where year to year, I do not get that much movement.
Okay.
So you know, when I put in, you know, what weight would I have for 2020? You know, I'm going to probably try it both ways. I'll try putting it in at 37%, and I'll try putting it at 75% and see how much difference it is. And I bet you it's a matter of a couple of decimal points, so it probably doesn't even matter to me.
Yeah. Matthew, how have you thought about it at all for your projections? Mm-hmm. I know you put them out. What are you thinking for – how are you – we asked Jenny Butler a similar question, but what are you thinking about it?
Everything Ariel said is the same for me, actually. So my projection system is also an aggregate. I don't do the projections themselves, but I'm basically putting the bright blend together, and then I grab each – after they're plastered together, I go through each person, and then I dissect volume. And then for this shortened season, I did the prorated 37% that you guys were talking about. And then when I put each player underneath the microscope, I weighted that volume. And then I basically did the same as RL in regards to strikeouts. I slightly gave an extra jolt to them because my assumption was that they would be fresher and that they would that they were going to be ahead of the hitters. So I kind of gave, you know, after weighting those things, you give a percentile boost to each one. And so I kind of did that as well. I think that's kind of what Ariel is saying in a similar fashion as well. So that's kind of what I did this year. And then moving into 2021, I don't think I'm going to really do anything much differently than I did this year weighting-wise. So I don't think it'll be too much different, except for the National League pitchers and the DH. I think that, you know, obviously that's going to have a significant impact on that side of pitching. So
and then some of the offensive park factors. Right.
That too. And I keep in touch with Derek Carty, and he was the one I kind of integrated his system from EV Analytics in that regard to that too. So,
and
shout out to Derek Carty; he's been very helpful to me.
That's awesome, Matthew. Keep me honest here, Ariel. We, as of right now, do not have a DH in the National League in 2021. Correct? I saw Trevor Bauer chirping at Mike Clevenger that he was going to homer off him next year. Is that an accurate statement that there currently is no DH next year?
I mean, currently now, but even in the middle of the season, doubleheaders were 9 innings, and they decided to change it in the middle.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, if I had to get, you know, what would be kept? I don't see a reason why baseball wouldn't keep that. The only reason that baseball wouldn't would be it's a leveraging chip for the owners.
Yeah.
But it's a small one.
I'm here for the DH in the National League. Do you guys both like it?
I do. I thought I was going to hate it, and I'm a purist, and I love it. I couldn't have been more wrong about my gut and what it told me, and I really do like it. What about you, RL? Do you like it?
I mean, I like the National League pitcher's hit because I grew up with it.
Yeah.
I don't dislike the DH. That's not a rule that I really have any argument with. I mean, these pitchers aren't there because of their hitting. So you're not selling a product that you have your best player batting if the pitchers are batting. And you know, also the minor leagues, they're not batting. They're not really getting the right reps. They're probably not as good as they could be. So, you know, you lose some of the nuances and you lose the flavor. That's what it is. You know, you're losing the pastime, the old flavor. That's what I'm more upset about. Whether does it really make more sense? Yeah, it does.
Well, as a Cardinals fan, Ariel, I can tell you that as bad as this offense is, I saw that Adam Wainwright had a higher WOBA than like six of the regulars until yesterday. So I am, you know, I'm fine with, you know, Adam Wainwright coming back, you know, pitching at age 40 or 41 or whatever he's going to be, because clearly the offense can't get any worse from a St. Louis Cardinals perspective at this point. So, but it's a rough team right now. Have you noticed, Ariel, in your projection system, or Matthew, even as yours as well, because it sounds like you guys have kind of similar formats. We talked with Jenny Butler about she kind of espoused drafting a JT Realmuto, because from a replacement value perspective and just where her models came up that she utilized quite a bit, he shot up the ranks that she was using pretty significantly. Do you have any outliers that as you compare RL to ADP that your ATC really sticks way out or that makes it unique that you wouldn't notice?
Well, I mean, there's two different questions there. You mentioned the catcher, JT Realmuto, sticks out. I mean, that's a totally separate question in terms of how you draft catch.
Okay,
right? Right, because, you know, you could make the case that, you know, Realmuto is so much better than replacement, and people are especially in two catcher formats, people are severely undervaluing the catcher, and that's why they're pushed up. I mean, he could be like a third rounder. You know, that's a whole different thing. Right, it's a market issue versus, you know, how risky is it to pick a catcher in the third round? If he gets hurt, you're screwed. You know, but as far as, you know, players that stick out for me, I mean, from ATC, I had going into the year Eddie Rosario, Michael Conforto, Eric Hosmer were guys. I had Paul DeJong, Jorge Polanco, Rafael Devers. I have a lot of his shares. I have a lot of Elvis Andrus as well for the steals. Yeah, those are some of the guys that stuck out from my end.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as we think about that catcher format, because you're talking to a guy, Ariel, in Matthew, that has nailed the catcher spot but going a different direction. I think Matthew was very high on waiting on catcher, and he's scooped a lot of those up. But we're certainly hearing some players that are really valuing, you know, that catcher slot has been an interesting one. But
so can I comment on the catcher a little bit more?
Absolutely. I think it's an interesting discussion.
I love catchers.
forget about auction for now. Let's talk about draft, which is the format that most people play. Okay?
Sure.
You draft JT Realmuto in the fifth round, okay? And nobody takes a single catcher until the 20th round. Was that a good move that you drafted JT Realmuto in the fifth round? No.
I would say no.
No, because the market is valuing catchers. So if you're drafting 13 rounds, 15 rounds ahead, you've done a disservice. But if the next catcher comes to the board in the seventh round and you got Realmuto in the fifth round, you did a great, great, great job, right? Because the market was valuing it and they just didn't pick Realmuto high enough, you snipe them, right? If you're the first catcher picked and somebody picks the next catcher right after, you've done great, but if there's a gap, there isn't. So it's really hard to value catchers, and it's really market dependent. That's the thing with catchers. It really doesn't matter what your value is. It really matters what everybody else does. In an auction, it's the same thing. You want to pay a market premium. If everybody is adding $5 to a catcher just to get it because of replacement level, well, it's okay to pay that $5. You just want to be better than everybody else. You don't want to go overboard and pay $10 extra, right? But if you paid $4 extra and everybody else is paying $6 extra, you did a great service, even though you paid more. So I think that a lot of things in playing fantasy baseball and drafting has to do with how the market values something. And you just have to be a bargain relative to what the market cost is. You see?
Very similar to closers as well.
Same thing. Yep. Mm-hmm. If you're out in a box and you grab a closer in the fourth round and nobody's taking closers, that was silly. But if you're the start of a closer run, you did a great job.
That's right.
Now, Ara, going the other direction, do you feel like what you've learned from your aggregate projections, you know, you list some guys that, you know, look to be providing a lot of value. Have you had to tweak it over time to recognize either a deficiency or anything going the other way, or maybe tweaked how you weighted somebody because you felt like you were underweight. How did you work through that process?
Well, I mean, there's two things. There's what I personally think, and then there's what ATC projects. I mean, I don't personally say ATC is right and that's the be-all, end-all. I use ATC as a mechanism to bubble up what I think are potential undervalued players, and then I do a deep dive and I go into them. And if I feel that a player is undervalued for a certain reason, then I'll push them up in my own rankings and I'll pay a little bit more to acquire the person and vice versa. The thing is, though, that if you sway away too much from ATC in the long run, you're not going to make it. Because the way projections work is that any one person is not going to be right. Nobody's ever going to nail a single projection. But if you look at a group of 10 players, if they're projected, you're going to get 7 out of 10 right, or at least in the aggregate, you're going to get the right value, right? It's about being right in total. And when you have 23 players on a roster, you know, it's all going to work out. It's the law of large numbers. So I never want to get too far away from the ATC projections, but certainly for any individual player, if I feel personally that it's wrong or whatever, Dominique Smith is a guy that ATC really didn't say much about, but I knew the Mets were going to play him more. I knew he had 130 WRC plus last year, and he was going to get some chances, especially if anything goes wrong with Cespedes, which it did. So you have to be your own man, but you have to be aware that don't go too far from the math, because in the long run, you won't be right.
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think the other thing that I've done, you know, RL, with your projections on Fangraphs is I always kind of – I think to what you're saying is I tweak them a little bit. If there's somebody, like I mentioned, that, you know, I think is going to play a little bit more, I'll maybe change, you know, something here and there. And that's where you got to make your call. You know, infamously, Matthew and I have also talked about I was extremely bullish on Trevor Bauer last year in my NFBC teams, and that did not work out so well. I had that conviction. I just clearly was wrong on that one. So
one other thing, though. If you're going to change projections, the place I would do it is not in the rate stats. It's in the playing time. If you think that, you know, because some people know their own home teams better, you know some situations better. If you think the situation that the projections say are wrong and this guy's going to get 100 more at-bats, you know, change it and scale up everything accordingly. Yeah. Like, that's the best way to modify the projection.
Sure. No, I think that.
Yeah, one of those guys for me this year was Jesse Winker. I think the volume was kind of wrong on some of the projections, and so he was one of those offensive hitters that I kind of gave that little volume boost to in a percentile.
Yeah. I think another one, Matthew, that you had pretty high, I was just looking at your projections again the other day. I think you pegged Will Myers correctly for playing time. I don't know that anybody, I don't know a lot of people saw this version of Will Myers, but you definitely had Will Myers earning the lion's share of playing time. And that's a thing I think we underrate. When I say we, I mean the community, not Matthew or me, Ariel. But it's just the commodity of playing time and counting stats are critical, right? And so if you can identify those guys. So, Matthew, you were all over Jesse Winker. And I'm pretty certain when I was looking at it, I noticed Will Myers stuck out for me too, because he was not a guy. I just didn't connect the dots. And the offseason moves should have told me he was going to play.
Are you worried about Will Myers because of all the trades the Padres did just now?
I mean, they traded for everybody in baseball, right? I don't know how they are even going to have a roster. They've got 60 people, it feels like. But I don't know. He's changed his swing, and he looks really good. Really, really good. I don't know that I'm worried. Matthew, are you worried about him at all?
I'm not. But to touch on where I had Will Myers in the projections, it goes to show you in regards to believing in them or not. So I don't have any exposure to Will Myers. And if you were to just simply draft off of my projections, you would have owned Will Myers everywhere unless you were, you know, competing with Toby Batflip Crazy in regards to trying to get him, because I believe his whatever evaluations he was doing, he was similarly high on him. But I didn't really buy into it, to be honest with you, because I was still kind of concerned about all of the, you know, just the piling up of injuries. So that kind of had me off of Stanton, that had me off of Judge, and, you know, look where they are, unfortunately. So that was kind of something that, you know, a little bit was in the back of my head in those short seasons with guys ramping up and needing to keep those ligaments and everything fresh and stretched out. And I was just kind of concerned about that. So I bought into, yes, if the, you know, I bumped him up because of the volume that was projected to be there, and it has been there. So it has worked out, but it didn't work out for me, unfortunately.
Yep.
Well, you know, those are going to happen, but at least you had the stones to predict them correctly. I mean, it was it was a good projection, but those are hard. But plenty of hits for you, Matthew. We totally get it, though. There's going to be some that are just a challenge. And moving to a format, Ariel, you've had a lot of success with, and that Matthew's played well in as well. I want to move and talk about the Auction Championship, since we're, you know, a heavy NFBC-focused podcast. This is one that you play quite a bit in. You finished 9th overall in 2016 and 30th in 2017, so two really high finishes in the Auction Championship. Tell us a little bit about auction strategy. I play in some auctions, but Ariel, how do you handle an auction strategy, and do you have kind of loose guidelines that you use for a hitting and pitching split, or how have you done that to be so successful in the past?
All right, well, in terms of the hitting and pitching split, I'm going to echo a lot of the stuff I said about catcher. And it should be market driven. I mean, imagine the ridiculous case where your league says they're going to go 90 hitting and 10% pitching, where they just don't value pitching. Well, great, you'll grab up all the pitching if you put a third into pitching and everybody else is putting 10%, but that's not going to win your league because 50% of the points come from hitting. So the idea is you need to guesstimate, and NFBC is pretty robust in the data. You can pretty much guess what the rough hitting and pitching split, it's somewhere around 63% these days. And you should set your projections to that. Yep. If you are better in pitching, then maybe give a percent or two more to hitting so that, you know, you can go the extra dollar and get a little bit better hitters if you're more comfortable with pitching and vice versa. So, sure. You know, tilt it towards your weakness just a little bit, but you don't want to go very far off the hitting pitching split, or you're going to be deficient in that area. I budget saves. I think that, saves are something that when I'm looking at my projections and my valuation of how much a player is worth, I think that there's a heavy market premium. I might say that the top closer is worth $11, but they're going to go for $19. So just what I said with the catchers, you're going to have to add some dollars just to get your saves, you know. But pretty much I take the ATC projections, any modifications that I have to certain players, and I create my auction price list. I do a very big job of getting what I think the ADP is, or I call it, sorry, the AAV, the average auction value is. And, you know, I'll base it on ADP lists, I'll base it on AAV lists, and I'm going to compare the two, and I'm going to discover what pockets of players I think are worth hitting. So, for example, I might think that there's four players at $20 in the outfield that are slight bargains for me that I think that I can probably get. I'm not going to get all of them, but I might get one of them at a $3 bargain. So I'll write on my list, okay, $20, because I think that I'm going to play there. And I'll do that for every position. I think that I'm going to play $13 shortstops and $2 shortstops, and I think I'm going to play $7 catchers. You know, you make a budget of what you think is the hot spot. I call it hot spots, of where you think you have the best chance of getting a bargain, and that's what you not target, but that's what your initial plan should be. Obviously, if something comes up in the middle, you got to switch around, change around money, but you should be aware of where the good pricing is based on your comparison of your values to AAVs. And go from there. That's the general gist of it in terms of drafting. And of course, you know, then you know, during the whole season, you got to be on top of the waiver wire. You have to know how to risk manage. You have to know how to look at schedules upcoming to maximize roster slots. You got to take pitchers that are going to have good weeks this week, good week the following week, where you can get them for free, right? If you look ahead 2 weeks, you know, you'll get players for just a dollar. If you wait a week before their good matchups come up, you'll have to pay $50. So, you know, you have to be conscious of that. And that's the general way to win.
Yeah. I like to take that AAV as well and then take the projections, and then that spits out its, you know, evaluation in auctions. And so let's say player A in AAV. So you look at the market and how much they've been costing in NFBC, and that gives you your AAV. And then you can say, well, player A is going for on average $13, and I'm looking at my evaluation and I have player A at $17. That's it's a +4. And so I'll put a +4 there, and you can kind of just go down each and every single one to see where you're at. And, you know, you will see guys that pop, and you'll see guys at -2 and some guys at +6. And, that'll kind of give you an idea of maybe some of the guys that are being undervalued in the market or overvalued.
Yep. Now, as you guys have done those drafts with the NFBC in the past, you know, you talk about those hot spots. I play one of my larger leagues is an NL only from an auction format, which really requires you to be focused because the pockets, when they hit, you got to be all over those. But Matthew, I thought that was really interesting what you just said, given that there's probably, you know, I think you play in a pretty high stakes auction format, right? I mean, are those pockets less pronounced because the room is so sharp? How does that shape up as you go through, or do you still find those bits and pieces that you can take advantage of?
Oh, you'll find them. So my NFBC partner, Zach Betancourt, and I, we do the $2,500 NFBC Auction Championship and the $1,300 NFBC Auction Championship. And we, you know, you'll find in any auction, once, you know, roster positions start to accumulate and budgets dry up and some people make mistakes along the way that aren't able to kind of execute on someone that's, you know, on average going for $3, but you really are, you're willing to pay $5, $6, $7. And especially when a tier starts to dry up, then people want to start to pay more for somebody. So if you're able to avoid some of those landmines, like not waiting for the last closer in whatever tier and, you know, or an elite starting pitcher, and that's the last ace or whatever, that, you know, they're going to essentially always cost more. And so you don't want to be on that kind of bubble, and, you know, avoiding that. And then just basically knowing those guys that you're keen on and you're high on and you're willing to pay above market price. If you're able to, like Ariel was saying, is I'm only spending X amount on these positions, like the catcher position, I only spend $7 total. If you stay to those strict budgets, you're going to be able to execute in, you know, when those players do pop up. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Now, Ariel, your Tout Wars head to head league, when I was looking through that, doing some show prep, that's an auction league. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. All the expert leagues I do for Tout and Labor, it's all auction based. Yeah.
Okay. So, Ariel, let's transition and talk about that. When you do that type of league in that expert, did you find the same thing? And how did that play out for you in 2020? I know, were you able to find similar pockets like that, or was the whole landscape so wonky with COVID and everything else? It was kind of difficult to decipher as you move through those.
Well, first of all, most of the expert leagues that I drafted occurred in March. So it was,
keep your roster.
Yeah, everyone kept their roster. Now, I mean, depending upon when you labor, I drafted, it was March 1st. So we didn't have any idea that the season wouldn't happen.
Okay.
But with Tout Wars, we did. We thought that, you know, we knew that the season wouldn't start on time. So, you know, you have to go with the flow there. It's funny, but I've noticed that I tend to do better in expert leagues, especially, you know, the big ones, Tout and Labor and whatnot, than I do in the NFBC these days. Because I'm honored, but people actually read my stuff now and use ATC projections. I remember coming last year to the ATC to the NFBC auction live in New York, and I'm looking at somebody's screen, and there's the ATC projections there. Oh, crap. this year, TGFBI, I go into the draft room, was online, and everyone's like, hey, Ariel, how you doing? Wow, I can't believe you're here. Oh, I love your projections, man. Ah, crap. You know, not that I can't navigate it, but it becomes a lot more difficult when your undervalued players become everybody else's undervalued players. But in the expert leagues, like Tout and Labor, the bigger ones there, those guys, I mean, they read me, I don't know, but they do their own thing. I mean, you know, Baseball HQ guys, they're going to do their own thing. Fantrax guys, they're going to go by their numbers. You know, they each have their own things coming into it, and they're not really worried about what I do. They don't look what I'm doing. You know, they're doing their own thing.
Sure.
So I'm able to get the players that I want in those leagues because people aren't really paying that much attention to me. In some of the NFBC ones these days, again, I'm honored to do so, but it really hurts me. They do pay attention to me. You know, if I make a bid, ooh, why are you bidding?
Yeah. Well,
two things I want to touch on real quick there. One, I use, since Ariel, you do the yours is an aggregate as well, and so I look at yours as basically like some sort of a bookmark for me to make sure I'm not too far high, too far low, like where are we at. So I actually compare our projections together once everything's all tightened up and submitted. Two is your projection system is much more popular than mine, and much more people know about yours. It's time for you to put yours behind a paywall, my man.
we'll see. I mean, if it comes to the point where I think that I would do better that way, maybe I would. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. For me, you know, fantasy baseball is a hobby, and I'm so mm-hmm. honored that Fangraphs and CBS and Roto Bowler want me to write and want me to put projections out. So I'm just honored right now to do it. I really haven't thought about the best way to monetize it. Who knows? I might be in touch with the baseball team. You never know.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, Ariel, when you play in these points leagues, and especially this head-to-head format, does it change strategy significantly? I know when I play in a points league, the pitchers fly off the board pretty heftily. But any unique strategy pointers that you have for folks that do play? And, I mean, yours is almost the unique whammy of not only is it points, not only is it auction, but then it's head-to-head. So you've got just this, you know, points and head-to-head is probably – I don't know. I don't play in a whole lot of formats like that, but it certainly seems like it's got a marketplace. Do you feel like you're thinking differently in that type of setup?
Yeah, I mean, the head-to-head doesn't factor as much into it as the points does. I mean, you're looking and, you know, it also depends on what type of head-to-head league. If you're doing head-to-head categories, then, you know, you might have a different strategy in terms of punt saves because you can, you know. And then you have to see what's expensive, what's not, and saves might be an option or steals might be an option to punt, you know. It all depends on the story. If it's straight points and it's just score at the end of the week, it doesn't really matter to look that way in terms of strategy. You're just doing your valuation and counting what your expected points are going to be, looking at what positions are more variable week to week. You know, in order to win these head-to-head things, you know, you don't want to have a really great week followed by a really crappy week, yeah. even though your average result is good, right? If you're an average 10% above everybody, that's great as long as it's 10% each week and not 30% minus 50%, you know? Yeah. So you have to make sure that you have enough stable players to keep up a certain threshold of points every week, and then you have the more variable players to add the oomph to go up any single week. You know, certainly pitchers are something that you need to spend time on the waiver wire correctly, because, you know, you have your base pitchers, and you should be streaming a lot more. Like, maybe I have three or four pitchers that I have that are solid, and my next six pitchers are just rotated every week depending upon matchups. You know, so it's a little bit more wonky with that. You know, it was a couple pointers.
No, I think that's helpful. It's a format that I have played very sparingly and that I am certainly not good at. So I want to talk to you about it just because I think that's definitely a unique one. It's fun. It's not that I don't enjoy it. It's just something that I haven't played a whole lot by or a whole lot of, at least in the past.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, Ariel, we have one listener question that I got. I don't know if you had any privately message you or not. But before that, I would just want to ask, any hard or fast rules that you have come by? We've gotten a variety of answers on this from all the, you know, experts and high-stakes players that we've gotten, ranging from, you know, Scott Genstadt was really big on this year especially. He wanted to lock in those two closers. That was his big thing. Jenny Butler talked to us about wanting to nab. She almost always nabs in a main event 15-team format, nabbing one elite starting pitcher, and she really, really goes after a guy like JT Realmuto early. Brian Vogel touched on he was basically the opposite of Scott Genstadt. He's fine with understanding the methodology, but he just thought the closer position was too volatile. Anything that you've noticed that – maybe you don't do it every time, but really it's embedded in your process.
We're talking about a hard and fast fantasy baseball rule. Right?
Correct. I mean, you can give me a life rule too, yeah, if you've got one.
Sure. Well, the life rule, I think that if you read Rudyard Kipling's poem called If, that is an immense poem that will give you so much goodness in terms of what you should be doing for and thinking in your life. You know, I mean, I take if you fill every minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, that's how to have a good life. But anyways, back to fantasy baseball. I'll give you two hard and fast rules. Number one is a general one. Stick with your plan.
Yeah.
It's about process, not about results. You know, if you've spent hours and hours and hours preparing your draft strategy and getting your player values, don't say, "Well, I gotta pay $5 more because it's going fast." Like, stick to your rules. Like, stick to what your plan was. Don't go awry. Have patience and execute. My second one, which is a little bit more targeted, is especially if you're playing in a draft format, everything should be in auction dollars. Don't just come in with a list of rankings. You need to know what the drop-offs are. You know, is how much more is Mike Trout better than George Springer? You know, it's yeah. not just, well, he's ranked 7 spots ahead. You need to know what the value is. Is he twice as valuable, 4 times as valuable?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're going into drafts, think of, you know, what position that you have to take is the position that you think that has the biggest drop. If I don't pick this player, I'm going to drop to a much lower value. Not just rankings, it's actual value drop. So everything is value, value, value. That's my hard and fast rule that I give to you guys.
No, I think that's really good. The value piece, I think, is something that we have in the back of our minds, but really driving that point of emphasis home, I know, has made me a better player. And I think your first point is very prescient. I think we have to understand, you know, maybe you'll get things wrong, right, Ariel, as you go through a draft. But that's when you need to reflect. And you can pivot in season, obviously, on the waiver wire. But as Matthew, you know, has coached me and given me guidance on, you know, just questioning my process, you've got to do that either before the season starts often or after the season's over. It's really hard to execute that, you know, as the season's going along. That's a challenge. So if you've done the prep work, like you mentioned, you got to stick with that process and then reevaluate, I think, as you finish. Anything from you, Matthew, that stuck out? All right. I don't know if Matthew's there. He, maybe, oh,
I'm sorry. I'm here. Yeah, I have a few things. Pay for pitching. Don't overspend on closers. And, you know, if it isn't JT Realmuto, don't, you know, buy punt catchers. I don't go for that. Anything below him is not, yeah, I'm out. So get your starters, stay in the middle with the closers, and then all the way up for JTR or all the way down for nobody.
Yeah.
Or Pedro Severino and Austin Romine. Shout out to them.
Yeah, those are two that you definitely nailed. You know, more props to you on that. All right, Ariel, we're going to hit you with two questions before we let you go, and we really do appreciate the time.
Sure.
The first one is, and we touched on this a little bit, but I think it was a little bit unique too. It's talking about 2020. And I guess the question is, you know, you talked about, you know, trying to figure out the weighting. Is it 38% or what's that? When you think about, you know, you're going to have a lot of different projection systems that you're aggregating. But I think as you think about looking, and maybe this is more really just about your personal belief, do you find yourself, is there a threshold for how you would weight a stat? And I think the example being given is, do you have to cross an innings pitched or an at-bat threshold for it to count for you? So a good example, I think, would be Matthew's Fab article has touched a lot on, assuming he comes back, right, is a guy like A.J. Puck. If A.J. Puck comes back and dominates but does that only for 35 innings, how would you personally as a player – think about a guy like A.J. Puck? Or I think we just saw that Eisen Diaz of the Marlins has reached an agreement with Major League Baseball, and he will come back and play for the Marlins. Does he have to generate a certain number of plate appearances or at-bats where you see the skills and say, yes, those are repeatable? Or do you cut guys off that maybe won't get a certain number of plate appearances or playing time, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's a complicated question. I think for hitters, the threshold is a little bit lower. I mean, if you look at, you know, how a player is walking, how they're striking out, you don't need that many at-bats. Those things stabilize pretty quickly. You know, power, you know, you want to look at components. I wouldn't just look at raw numbers. We're looking at homer to fly ball rate and is the spread of ground ball to fly ball same and different? So I think that if you look at the components of it, you can go a little bit less in terms of, you know, stuff like that.
When pitching, you say quicker, Ariel, real quickly, when you say quicker, what do you mean by that? Do you mean 75 plate appearances? Do you mean 50? Do you mean 100? What's – do you have a number in mind?
I don't have a hard number. I mean, okay. You know, I mean, in this 2020 season, it's kind of
– Oh, that's okay.
You're going to toss the whole thing out? I mean, no, it's – I don't have a hard and fast number. I shouldn't say that. You know, walks and strikeouts might stabilize at around 7,500 at bats, that kind of thing. So you know, if you want a hard and fast number, maybe it's 7,500 plate appearances.
Okay.
Good representation. Oh, that's good. Hitter. You know, yeah. Maybe that. Pitchers, you know, it takes a little bit longer, obviously. But I'm looking these days more on the pitch. The pitch stabilizes a lot quicker. You need about 3 or 4 outings to see how the pitcher is pitching.
Sure.
So I do a metric called WPDI, Weighted Plate Discipline Index, that is looks at outcomes of, you know, is the ball swung at, is the ball in the zone, is the ball contacted, yeah. And it's the denominator is pitchers, not innings, and not even at batters. It's pitches, yeah. Literally. That'll stabilize in 3-4 starts. So I think that my threshold for pitcher is a handful of starts. If I'm going to look at what they're doing, I don't look at the ERA as much as, you know, what they're actually doing. Are they getting whiffs? Are they getting swinging strikes? That kind of thing.
Nope. I think that makes sense. The other question we've got for Ariel is specific player question. And I think it was sent to us after his 8th brilliant start of the season. And it relates to Shane Bieber of the Cleveland Indians. And the question is, not about your projections, but about your personal belief. Do you see Shane Bieber being the number one overall starting pitcher in 2020? And what do you think your projections would say as well?
I have not thought about that at all in terms of 2021.
Sorry. 2021.
Yep. 2021. I don't operate that way. I don't say I think he's going to be there. I wait and see what the projections are going to come and go from there. So it's you know, it doesn't really matter what I think, really. It matters what everybody else thinks. And to me, whatever the answer is, he's going to be overvalued. I mean, if you're asking the question as, is he going to be the number one overall pitcher, it means he's probably overvalued at the number one overall pitcher, right? You know, I'm probably – anybody who has a career year almost always regresses. He's got a strikeout rate over 14 for a starting pitcher is incredible.
Yeah.
You know. Although his metrics seem pretty good, I mean, except for the fact that his strand rate is 96%. That means
he's gonna keep that up. Don't worry about it, Ariel. Sure. He'll be fine.
Sure. Only 4% of batters are scoring. I mean, the league average is like 25. So you know, his ERA is just, you know, you're not gonna get it.
I get it. Yeah.
But most of his component stuff is pretty good. You know, he's looking there. He is walking more batters, by the way, even though his whip is great. He is walking more batters than he has in the past. So, yeah. You know, do I think he should be the number one overall pitcher next year? Probably not. Will he go there? He'll go first round or so. I probably won't be picking him, though, because I think he'll be overvalued. I'm probably going to be off the gotta get an ace unless you're getting like a Cole or DeGrom. I think those are, barring injury, I mean, those skills are just, you know, there.
Yeah.
I haven't made up my mind on Bieber whether I'm solidifying him as he's the guy yet. The jury is still out for me on him.
Matthew, what do you think? Shane Bieber, number one?
No, not for me. Ariel touched on some good things on him. I had Lucas Giolito actually ranked right above him or projected right above him. So I was wrong. Not that Giolito's been bad or anything. He's been fine, but I kind of underestimated the skill set of Shane Bieber just a tad bit. I would have been in on him maybe in the middle to late second round, and he was going to go end of the first, early second in those main events. So I wasn't going to be getting him where I was drafting. So moving forward to 2021, I'm probably not going to be in on the market because where he goes will be, like Ariel said, right next to DeGrom or Cole, and I'm probably just going to go right back to one of those guys. Definitely DeGrom would be the guy for me. And then next year, you know, we're going to be going back to a regular 162. We're not going to be playing the Royals every game. So I think that's going to be factored in as well.
We hope.
Yeah.
We don't know where
we hope. We hope. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Correct. But you know, think you know, if it is a 162 game season and they are playing interleague games and you know out of division and whatnot, I don't think that that's a positive for him. So.
Nope. I think I agree with both of your points. It's hard to take him over some of those guys, and it'll be interesting to see how they do the rest of the season. But
are people drafting now for 2021? Like what question is what why I it's a valid question, but will it actually come up now?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've got a couple of months, right?
There are some leagues that start. Larger leagues that start the last week of the regular season, so they'll start in about 3 to 4 weeks. I think people are, you know, already prepping,
What's the advantage to play in those? Like, is it a little bit more lucky, or can you discern an advantage from drafting early? Like for me, I wait till March to draft everything because I work on process, not on not on results. There, I want to get the latest information possible.
They're thirsty degenerates, RL, to put it nicely.
I respect it. I just don't understand what the what the advantage or how to play that is.
I think for some of the leagues, they just like to get an idea as far as where people are going. I think there's certainly value if you guess right, but you can also guess wrong on people too, RL, to your point. But Matthew's answer couldn't have been more succinct and correct. They just want to play. So
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Ariel, thanks a lot for the time. It was really fun diving into your projection system, talking baseball with you. Where can we, where can the listeners find your work and maybe plug what you're working on?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you can read my stuff on Fangraphs. I write in the Rotograph section. I have a series now on my WPDI. I'm actually comparing it to pitcherless Alex's Fast's CSW metric, which he got him the research article of the year last year. So you'll see a nice comparison and take a look at that. Some interesting stuff. I write for Sportsline. I wrote for Rotoballer. I also do the TGFBI Beat the Shift podcast. If you guys like strategy, and we're all about the strategy on the podcast, not just which player is good. And we do some of the players too, and we give you waiver wire picks and whatnot. But we focus on how do you trade, when to know when you trade, when to know when to pick up fab, how much should you bid? Like literally the strategy aspect that go into leagues. If you like that, listen, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, we do the Beat the Shift Edition podcast. And you can find me on Twitter at ATCNY. It's the shortest Twitter handle in all of fantasy baseball.
Hey, Ariel, I would love to have you back on just to talk to you about the WPDI at some point.
Sure.
Maybe this off season or something like that when we're all, you know, anxious to talk about some baseball. That would be something I'd really like to learn from you.
My pleasure. Sure.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate you being on and hanging out with us and giving us your time. So best of luck the rest of the season. Is there anything else either of you guys would like to say before we head out?
Not for me. Thanks a lot, Ario. It was great.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Nice talking, and good luck to everybody in the rest of the fantasy baseball season.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.